Hi, my name is Gemma Jackson, and I'm the production designer for Aladdin, and you're listening to the Go Creative Show.
Hey, everyone. My name is Ben Consoli. I am a director and owner of BC Media Productions, and this is the Go Creative Show, the show dedicated to creative professionals in the video production and filmmaking industries. Today, we speak with the amazingly talented Gemma Jackson, production designer for shows like Game of Thrones, Finding Neverland, and her latest film, Aladdin. We discuss transforming an animated classic into live action, her process for designing worlds, her relationship with director Guy Ritchie, and much, much more. The Go Creative Show is supported by Rule Boston Camera, Hedge.video, Shutterstock, Magnanimous Rentals, and Premium Beat. Well, I got to say, I had very high hopes for this new Aladdin movie because, you know, I was very excited for the live action version of it. I've been, you know, all excited about it when they had that first preview come out and, you know, all the controversy surrounding the genie and all of this stuff. So I was really looking forward to it. And I have to tell you, it delivered. The film was fantastic. Well acted. The music was great. It was so much fun. Just really well directed. I mean, obviously Guy Ritchie is going to do a great job, but it's just so well done. And really, the standout of the whole thing are the worlds that are created there, the environments, the sets. They're absolutely gorgeous. So we had to have somebody on the show to talk about it, and that's why we have Gemma Jackson. She's a legendary production designer. She's worked on a million things and all excited about Aladdin. She's proud of it, and she should be, because it looks amazing. You guys are going to love that movie and really appreciate the work that Gemma has done to it. And we're going to talk all about that in just a couple of minutes. But before we get there, I want to talk about Shutterstock.com. Shutterstock is, you know, they have over, I'm looking at their site right now, over 14, almost 15 million royalty-free clips are on the site right now, which is insane. And a lot of it is in 4K. So all you 4K people, you're going to find what you're looking for. But I want to bring your attention to Shutterstock Select. Now, this is a section on the site. You go to Shutterstock.com, hover over footage, and click Shutterstock Select. Now, this is the best of the best that Shutterstock has to offer. It's broadcast quality stuff. Okay, so you're going to get premium, highly curated footage that's captured in up to 4K by leading industry filmmakers. Okay, shot on cutting-edge gear. We're talking Red cameras, Zeiss Master Primes, that type of stuff. Okay, and the pricing is simple. All Shutterstock Select clips are $3.99, and it includes unlimited worldwide usage. So you have the quality, you have the gear that's being used, you have the simple pricing, and the fair pricing, especially for what you get. You get what you pay for with Shutterstock Select. So head over there, check it out. This is going to elevate your work, and isn't that what we all want to do? So head over there, Shutterstock.com. All right, let's jump in. We've got a big interview coming for a fantastic film and a wonderful guest, Gemma Jackson. So I'm here with Gemma Jackson. She is the production designer for the brand new Aladdin film, which we are all so excited about. I'm super excited about this since the very first trailer. And I know that you have to be excited about this too. What does this feel like to be tasked with creating a live action version of Aladdin? That must be a real interesting challenge.
It's a totally fabulous situation to be in. I've enjoyed most aspects of getting this film on, you know, made and done. And I'm very, very proud of it. And they're a fantastic group of people to work with. And I'm thrilled with the result.
Well, we're really happy to have you here. We're all really excited about the film. And, you know, going through your website, you have done some really amazing work. I mean, Game of Thrones is in the top of everyone's mind because the finale was last night. I almost want to see, you know, if there are any parallels between what the work that you did on Game of Thrones and the work that you've done with Aladdin. What do you think?
Well, obviously, this is something that's come up a little bit because of Game of Thrones, you know, the moment that has arrived at last of the end of the whole show. I think the only parallels you can draw, really, is that it's the same designer on both shows. The same designer who set Game of Thrones up. I didn't finish it. I did the first 4 years, and then, as you know, somebody else took over. So I think the parallels are that it was my hand at the helm at the beginning, and my hand that has created Aladdin. Other than that, I would like to think that I've moved on since Game of Thrones, and that every job you do, you approach differently with a different set of rules and ideas and fantasies. And, you know, I myself, it didn't occur to me when I set out on Aladdin that I was sort of doing anything to do with Game of Thrones whatsoever. It never crossed my mind. It's just come up quite a lot in the last few days, I think, because Game of Thrones has reached its finale, etc.
Well, it's top of people's minds. I mean, when you look at both projects, it's like they couldn't be more different. And I'm wondering, is there something in the mind of the designer that is carried over from one to the other? I mean, there's a bigness in Aladdin that even almost like surpasses the bigness of Game of Thrones, which is really fascinating because you're really recreating something that is illustrated first, and now you need to make a live action version of that illustration. And I'd love to kind of know your approach as you're diving into something like this.
I think what happens is, you know, of course, it's a wonderful kind of time honored animation. But when I kind of really got cracking on it, I kind of forgot about that. For me, I had a script, I had a three-dimensional world that I was creating. I think the parallel that you were drawing a little bit earlier is that I think perhaps my skill is in creating worlds. I think that's something I do and I love to do, and perhaps that's one of the things that people approach me for. I like to create, which is why I think, just going back on what you were saying about Game of Thrones, you know, the worlds of Winterfell or King's Landing, the castle, you sort of, everything has to have its own world. And I think Aladdin has a very pure, beautiful world of, we didn't want to be in any particular country of any particular race or religion, but we wanted to create a very clear world for our story, for our characters. And I think Guy, the sea came into it later on. Originally, we were sort of very much on the edge of the desert. And then we suddenly realized it'd be great to have the sea there too. So it felt like a real trading place with people moving through and moving on and moving out. And within that, you've got your street rat trying to kind of earn a buck, and a palace sitting there sort of commanding everything. And I think it's those worlds that was my job, was to make those things work and for you as an audience to be turned on by it all, you know.
Well, let's talk about one of those worlds. You had mentioned the city of Agrabah now being more of a port city. And in some ways, there's some differences between the way you guys approached in the live action and the way it was in the animation.
Sure.
I'd love to know what those differences were and how that impacted the way that you designed it.
Well, I think, to be absolutely honest with you, when I talked to Guy about possibly doing this job, I went straight off and ordered up all the Aladdins. There's quite a few Aladdins, actually animations apart from the real classic one. And I watched them all and was completely enchanted by them all. I also, you know, I used to work in the theatre. I once did a pantomime, which is a wonderful British tradition of Aladdin. We love to take stories and turn them upside down. And I knew that, you know, everybody knows the story of Aladdin, one version or another, I think. And I think once you start to design a three-dimensional, fully, you know, charactered, real actors show, I kind of forgot about the animation, really and truly. Huh. And I think at times, script-wise and stuff, if things were slightly sort of going haywire, that they found, I think Guy found sometimes the best thing to do was to go back to the original because, you know, that was perfect. And so why try and make it better or, you know. But I think at the same time, the script is a little different in the kind of some of the emphasis of different characters, etc. And I think we try to approach it as a new product, a new experience for everybody. We weren't trying to, I think the animation stands alone. I think it's so beautiful and perfect that that's that. And now this is this. This is a new event, you know.
Yeah, I also feel like people crave that too. It's like as much as people want to see their old animated classic and their childhood really revitalized into this new age, I think you want it to be different. You want it to be bigger. You want it to be just brighter and more interesting and more modern. And I think, I mean, I know personally, I'm very much welcoming any change that's there because I think it'll be so interesting to compare the two.
I think just sort of, there's wonderful things like, I mean, the music is fairly classical You know, it's fairly as it should be. But the movement is very modern. It had this wonderful choreographer called Jamal Sim, and it's quite kind of streety. It's kind of a little bit Bollywood at times, but it's got lots of sort of hip-hoppy things to it. You know, and they jump around. They do sort of parkouring over little tiny alleys and what have you. So there's that side of it, I think, is more contemporary and now. And I think the kind of cheekiness of Aladdin with his relationship with Jasmine as it starts out, it's kind of, there's nothing reverential about it. It's quite straight on, you know. He's a great little character, you know. And I think that all those elements, and then the genie kind of shows up and he's like, what, you've never heard of me? You don't know who I am, you know? Yeah. Who is this guy kind of thing? And all that stuff is great. I mean, Will's a great, what's the word? You know, he loves to kind of throw in a few lines, and he's usually really good with all that sort of stuff. And I think all that brings a modern twist to it, don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's in the casting, it's in the directing, it's in the costume design.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to ask, you know, Guy Ritchie to do Aladdin, you're going to get a bit more of a street version, you know? I mean, that's obviously why Aladdin went to him. They wanted something a bit different, you know?
So now, with the city of Agrabah being a port city and really, like, nestled in between the sea and the desert, I'd love to know how did you use that little, it's a point now where it's cross-cultural. It's not just the locations anymore. Now it needs to represent so much more than just the desert and so much more than even just those people. How are you approaching that design? Because I think what's so interesting about the way that you did Agrabah is you needed to make room for all of these moving shots and all the action that Guy Ritchie is going to need in a Guy Ritchie movie. And you also have so many elements to it that you need to involve. And I'd love to hear how you begun that process. What inspired you to do it?
Well, it's a complicated process, as you can imagine. I think the inspiration initially, very early on, we talked about very possibly shooting Agrabah in Morocco. And so I went off and did quite a lot of research and found some potential places and was quite excited, actually, about the idea. But what was really interesting was that the more the demands of the script became clear, the more it became clear that actually we should build it. Because if we were going to go and use some existing locations or little villages that we found around outside Marrakesh, which were wonderful, I mean, absolutely wonderful, but there was so much work that had to be done to them to make them kind of fit the plan, if you know what I mean, that actually in the end they said, you know what, Gemma, can you build it? You've got 15 weeks, which is not long to do something like that. But because they're kind of fairly generic kind of buildings. So what happened was I kind of took chunks of beautiful things that I'd seen in Morocco that I thought we were going to shoot in. And then I sort of took chunks of other things that I loved and elements that I felt were important. And then what happened was we then sort of made a big kind of 3D kind of quarter inch model, which is always really useful for everybody to kind of get a look at. Because then one of the important elements, if you remember at the beginning, is the one jump. And so, of course, you've got to have them kind of that whole mad kind of run, you know, leap, sing, fall, all the things that had to happen. They all had to be very specific. So, for example, you know, the building where they leap across on that pole, they came to me and they said, you know, Gemma, this is all great, but can you bring that building in 10 foot? Because at the moment, I can't remember now, but, you know, can we move it to make the gap the right length to do it on a pole, blah, blah, blah. So there were lots of things like that. So that when we had a kind of overall design, which I was very excited about, then we then had to work in very particular requirements, both for the jumping and for the beats of the music, etc., and for me to still feel happy that it looked how I wanted to look. So it became quite a sort of, it was really interesting pulling it all together. And then, of course, you have lovely things where the petals fly up in the air, or the tannery where they jump through all the dye vats, and we try to give as much colour and interest as possible. And then I think your other part of the question is that because it was a sort of trading place, it meant that the market could be absolutely heaving with as much beautiful kind of bounty as we could put our hands on of every sort and kind. And, you know, markets, you go a bit like, oh God, markets, what are we going to do? What's going to be different? But I talked a lot to my set decorating team, who are amazing, and Tina Jones is just fantastic. And we discussed, you know, this is not going to look like any other market we've ever done before. It's going to be our new market. And I think it really, really, I love the fact there's a lot of stuff on the floor. I think that it was the characters, you know, Michael Wilkinson's costumes were sensational, of all those people coming from all around the world and convening in this spot.
I have a new daily routine now. I do. I go to Magnanimous Rentals every day now and check their flash discounts. Why? Because Magnanimous Rentals is a production equipment rental house. They're located in Chicago and they ship all over the country. But they are obsessed with making sure that they have the lowest prices possible. Anywhere, really anywhere in the country, these guys have the best prices. There's no question about it. Now, why do I go there every day? Well, because their regular prices are already really great. So you don't have to worry about it. No matter what you want across their entire inventory, it's going to be priced really, really well. But they also have these things called flash discounts. Now, these are limited time discounts that are steep. Steep. Sometimes you can get stuff for up to 50% off. Okay. Like for example, today. Now, this, I'm not promising you that this deal will be available when you go, but right now, when I'm looking at their site, one of their discounts is a Red Epic W 8K. It's the body kit. Okay. And I just to test it, I went on there and I set a pickup and a return, less than $650 for 2 days for that camera rental. That is amazing. And it doesn't stop there. They get flash discounts all the time. And that's why I check all the time. Because the thing is with the flash discounts is, yes, they're extraordinarily steeply discounted, but they are limited time offers. So you don't need to rent the equipment during the time that the flash discount's available. You just need to place your order while the flash discount is happening. So you can set the dates, who knows when. You can set it for weeks from now. But you have to place the order while the flash discount is happening. So that's why I check it every day. And I suggest you do the same thing over at magrents.com. You know, leaving a deal like that is leaving money on the table. Why would you want to do that? Check out magrents.com. I guarantee you, you're going to find what you're looking for. And even if it's not a flash discount, it's going to be a great price. Check it out for yourself at magrents.com. And lastly, let's talk about Hedge. Man, oh man, I love Hedge. Hedge is a backup software for filmmakers, so it's perfect for us and the Go Creative Show audience, of course. I love it because you can import multiple sources and send it to multiple destinations all at the same time. I also love it because it's very fast, it's intuitive, it's easy, and when you have the Hedge Connect app for your phone, it lets you know when the transfer is done. So it's just a great program. So I take all of my camera cards, my audio cards, I throw it into the source area of the app. Then I set my destinations, which for me is always two hard drives so I can have a double backup. I press the transfer button and I just let it go. And then I get an alert on my phone. It's just so great. It's so seamless. And they just announced a Frame.io integration. So now if you have Frame.io installed on your desktop, the watch folders in Frame.io can be a destination. And this is huge because now, you know, when you're on set and you're setting your destinations, you can throw it in a watch folder and your editor can grab the footage right there. It's a huge time savings. Really is fantastic integration and smart integration, and it works great. So how do you get it? Well, you go to hedge.video, and while you're there, you type in Go Creative Show into the coupon code, and you get 20% off the full license. So just by going over there and typing in Go Creative Show, 20% off. So check it out for yourself. I know you guys are going to love it, because anybody listening to this show, you're in the film industry, you're in the creative industries, and you're always going to be backing up your footage and your media. This is the app to get. Hedge.video. I'd like to take a moment and talk about the choreography, because there are songs, there is dancing, there's a lot of choreography in the actors, but also in the camera movement. And I'd love to know the way that you interact with the choreographer to get all of this stuff to happen.
The choreographer, in a sense, he came on. A lot of work was being done and had been done. And fortunately, he and I kind of clicked really, really well. So we just had to discuss things. I think we just had to, as I say, we just had to sometimes move a building or move some, you know, kind of create a bigger space or a shorter space. You know, for example, at the end of the film, you know, that lovely, lovely ending when you think it's all over and then, wallop, you have that great dance. That whole courtyard was built for the end of the film. We hadn't got it when we first finished the film. That didn't exist. And then we had some additional photography last summer, and it was discussed and decided it needed that one last element of joy, actually, is what it is. And so we built that courtyard. Well, that could be quite simple because essentially it was a space for people to do a fabulous dance in. You know, I just filled it with all that colour and beautiful, you know, all the gorgeous trees around the edges with all the bougainvillea and everything. And the rest of it was just a big space for Jamal to do his thing in, you know, and there was no question that that's what it was for. Mm.
I'd love to talk about the Sultan's Palace and your approach to that. Where did you draw your inspiration from to how the interior of that palace ended up looking?
I was kind of plowing around all my books and all my favorite places. In a situation like this, I was looking around to the Persia and the East and all sorts of wonderful architecture. And I came across this Burmese monastery, which just clicked. I don't know, it just ticked boxes for me. It was a beautiful, slightly shabby, rundown wooden structure, which had been painted gold, which I thought was just rather wonderful. So I started to play with that idea and started to play with some more, slightly more sophisticated architecture, but a lot of it was kind of came from that monastery. And I think it started with the big main sort of reception area, and it had the sort of outside-inside feeling to it, and you went out to the courtyard, and there were all those sort of grills around the outside. You could sort of see the plants, the air came through, there were curtains swishing around. And then it kind of went out from there, and I decided that I wasn't going to make every room in the palace like a whole different world. I thought, this is going to be one, you know you're in the palace, and it's all of this sort of similar kind of quite structured architecture, but all this beautiful gold and all these beautiful kind of carved elements. And just that's really how we went. Jafar's room, as you might remember, the baddie who was up in a tower up above, we went a bit different there. But sadly, that's one of the sets that was the least shot. It's so funny. There's always one on a film that you adore and that doesn't get seen enough. Because that one had a huge amount of detail in it and was probably the most Islamic, actually, of all of them. It was the Burmese monastery that did it for me, that got my brain going.
Do you get disappointed when you see the final cut and you know, something that you loved and worked on for a long time? You're like, oh man, I wish there was more time on that. I really love that.
Of course I do. Of course I do. But usually one understands that, you know, actually what's more important than your set is the kind of the beat of the film and the speed at which it's got to move. And of course there's, you know, I'm a bit old and gray now, so I'm kind of past that really, but I'm still passionate enough that I do care. Of course I care.
Well, you know, the people in this audience are paying attention to everything. So
nah.
Even if it isn't shot that much, you can be sure that our audience is being laying eyes on it and really enjoying it.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. That's great. That's really good.
Now, the complete juxtaposition here, Aladdin's Tower. I would love to talk about this because there is no palace here, that's for sure, but it still has to be grand. It still has to be impressive because he needs to impress the princess. And I think you did a really beautiful job in making this it just as interesting and just as luxurious in a weird way as the palace.
Well, thank you very much. I'm really glad you kind of got that. We love that set, all of us in my art department. And when we talked to Guy about it, he was early days, he kind of thought it'd be really cool if, you know, Aladdin was quite a clever guy. He wasn't just some sort of, you know, tramp on the street. He'd got a bit of something going on. And then there was a lot of conversation about, from sort of producers and stuff, well, if he's so bright, how come he's, you know, a street rat if he's got this? And so there was a bit of to-ing and fro-ing on all of that. But in the end, I'm so glad because actually, you know, when they go up the steps, when he sort of pulls out a bit of wood and the steps come up, at one point that was gone because he was considered to be too clever. But then in the final film, it's there, and I'm delighted because I think it gives him a bit more character somehow. And then up he goes, and then you've got that gorgeous bit of cloth, and the rest is a kind of pile of rubble, is the idea, you know, that it's just a ruin. And the idea was that if anybody was to have got up there who wasn't invited, they'd just think it looked like a pile of rubble with a bit of old cloth on top and not realise that there was his little treasures underneath. That was the sort of the thinking behind it.
Yeah. I think what's interesting is you have to show his intelligence. You have to show his ability to turn nothing into something fabulous and spectacular. And I think you were really able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was exactly what we wanted to do. And as you say, so she comes up and she's enchanted by it. She's like, who is this guy? You know, he's got this rather enchanting little spot with a beautiful view of the palace, of course. And he's not, you know, if he'd just taken her sort of under the railway bridge or something, I don't think she'd have been so impressed, you know.
Yes.
So
what's your relationship like working with Guy Ritchie?
It's good. We've done three films together now because we did Arthur, Legend of the Sword first, and then we did Aladdin. And since then, we've done another film, which is a very contemporary, very, very different sort of thing. And I obviously enjoy working with him, or I wouldn't keep going back for more. It's a really good relationship. He's very appreciative. He kind of, when something has to happen, it happens, but at other times, I get on with it, and until such time as he's not happy with something, you know, I just keep going, and it's a very good relationship. I'm very lucky.
Does he give you a lot of freedom in your designs?
Yeah, he does. Yes, he does. But as I say, when he feels strongly about, you know, whatever it is, you know, of course he'll say so. And so often his instinct, he's a very instinctual man. And we can be busking along, getting stuff going, and then suddenly he'll come along and say, you know what, Gemma, that has to be, you know, 10 foot higher or 50 foot wider or whatever it is. And he's usually absolutely spot on, you know, right.
How important is that for you? Like, do you like having a lot of freedom to do whatever you would like? Or is it sometimes interesting and sometimes helpful to have a director that is so specific that you almost kind of follow their vision?
Well, to be absolutely honest with you, I haven't worked with anybody like that for ages.
Yeah.
So I've been very lucky in the last few years. I've worked with some really good people. And I think as I've got more mature myself and more confident, you know, I feel more confident that people will ask me to do something because they like my approach and they like my work and they feel comfortable working with me. So you know, I'm just working with Joss Whedon now, and we're just starting out together. And that's another very interesting man, a very complicated, wonderful mind working away. And we're just finding our way through it, you know. And he's very generous, and I do stuff, but he's got very particular desires and very particular things he wants. And they're all the same. You know, they're all different. The buck stops with them, doesn't it? You know, so. Mm. I enjoy them all in their different ways.
You are listening to the PremiumBeat.com Song of the Week. It's called Typewriter by Wolves. Premium Beat is where to go for all of your royalty-free music and sound effects. I'm in the process, as we speak, really, of finding a song for a new commercial. I put my money where my mouth is. I love Premium Beat, and I go there all the time. Now, when you download a song from Premium Beat, first of all, it's only $49, which is crazy, especially for what you get, because you don't just get the song. You get loop sets, you get cut downs, you get stems. It's amazing. And what that really means is customization. So you can customize your music to fit your project perfectly. It's all there over at premiumbeat.com. And lastly, Rule Boston Camera. Rule is the place to go to purchase and rent all of your production equipment. We've got a fantastic inventory, and they've been around for over 30 years, so you can imagine what's in their warehouse. It's pretty astounding. I'm talking everything. Cameras, audio, lighting, grip gear, communications, dynamics, everything you could possibly want is there. I mean, the Hollywood films coming into Boston use these guys. If it's good for them, it's certainly good for us. They got a huge selection of lenses, too. So have you people that you got your cameras, but you rent your lenses, which is a great strategy. Look no further than Rule Boston Camera. But the big thing with them, aside from the inventory, is that, you know, you're going to get expert advice and counsel in pre-production, technical guidance when you take the equipment out for your shoot. And they are committed to support you throughout your entire project. So I mean, really what it is a production partner. So you know what I'm saying? It's like you use them, they've got your back. You know, they're there to support you. And that's the type of that's the type of relationship I'm looking for when I'm renting gear. I rent because I don't own. And if I don't own, I don't know everything about it. But they do. They can answer all of your questions and make sure that you are fully prepared to use that stuff when you take it out on your sets. So you pair that type of service with that type of inventory. There's really nowhere else to go. So check them out for yourself at Rule Boston Camera at rule.com, RULE.com. I want to talk about color a little bit.
Oh, yes.
There is one very specific color that you have to have in this film, and it's the genie. I mean,
yes.
That's the most iconic color in the piece. And it's not, it's a difficult color. I mean, it's a very bright, very visible blue.
Sure.
How are you incorporating color in this project?
Well, I think if you think about it, I've used a lot of color. It's a really, really colorful film. And I think I then inspired Michael to use lots of color too. Michael Wilkinson, the costume designer.
Oh, okay, yes.
Because, I mean, he's got wonderful color everywhere. And I think probably the fact that we are dealing with a blue genie kind of gives you license to go any which way, doesn't it, really?
Yes.
You know, no one can sort of say, oh, a bit bright or whatever. And I think because we started off thinking about Morocco, and I showed Guy lots of sort of images of sort of beautiful pink streets and all the rest of it. And we decided to go down that route and to use color shade. And I mean, it's aged down. It's not all kind of pristine. But I think it really works. And I love all the characters against those streets. I think they all look, particularly the markets and the squares and what have you. And then you have, you know, like in the parade, you've got the camel covered in orange flowers coming through. And it just is a huge, great big kind of splash of color coming through the dark pink, the pink buildings and things. And then the palace, that's another reason why the palace being gold and not being sort of like all different colors in all different rooms, because, of course, a lot of the objects and paintings and things. But I think it gave it a kind of continuity. It didn't kind of, what's the word? I think if it had been all different colours as well as the colours of Agrabah, it would have just been overwhelming for the audience. But I think as it was, you're in this very rich, luxuriant kind of atmosphere and colour palette. And then outside it's hustle and bustle and chaos and light and sea and desert and people. And so that's where we can really go to town.
I love the juxtaposition between the palaces and the extravagance and the craziness on the street. And then the equally beautiful, equally extravagant in its own way, desert scenes, where it's just nature. How did you approach mixing the two?
Well, in my opinion, it's absolutely, I love the desert scenes. And I think it gives it the film just the absolute root that it needed. I think the kind of huge open spaces, when you've been in these little narrow alleyways and what have you, or within the confines of the palace, suddenly to be in this huge space, it could be endless. We all know deserts are huge. Yeah. And these little tiny, you know, that shot with the little camels going across, I absolutely adore it. I think it just gives real space to the film and breath. You know, you can sort of take a breath and it's, you know, you come out of there also, I think, with the genie. They said, my God, I've been inside this lamp for centuries. It's, you know, boing, and suddenly he's really like, whoa, bring it on, I'm in this space. And I think then you can go back to the hustle and bustle of the city again, but you've been out into this. And I think that's a really important beat in the film myself.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the whole thing is almost like an exploration of space, like using space to tell a story, because you have so much, you have confinement mixed in with these big grand areas. And I wasn't even thinking about the genie, but I mean, how much smaller of a space can you possibly be? Like the genie is enjoying the newfound space that he has too.
Yeah.
It's an interesting thought, but that it really is kind of you're constantly mixing back and forth between small and large spaces. I love that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How important is authenticity when you work on Aladdin? Because I mean, it's an animated film, so you can kind of go anywhere. But you also are representing a part of the world. Talk to me about your Well, talk to me about how important authenticity is for this.
Well, it's a tricky one. That, I mean, what happens as a designer and with a team like mine who I've worked with before, we get sort of so deeply entrenched in our worlds that honestly, kind of by the time we're nearly finishing, if you just said to me, oh, you know, there's a step around the corner that needs a bit of paint, what color? I would be able to say, oh, steel blue. I mean, whatever. I just know it, the place so well. So the authenticity isn't quite, I don't think, what you mean by authenticity. I mean, it's Aladdin. You could do anything you like. You know, yeah. It's not real. He's not real. The place doesn't exist. But we've created a world that you all as an audience have to feel committed to and excited by. So we have to create our own kind of reality. But we have to be kind of, it's very hard to explain, but we kind of have to be kind of honest to ourselves within the art department, just my world, my part of it, to that everything sort of has a reason. And, you know, we did a lot of buying in Morocco, actually. So we bought a lot of doors and windows and beautiful kind of painted screens that we chopped up and put into odd little places. And we kind of created our own language, I think. And we certainly had our own kind of palette, you know, so the buildings we had a sort of in the workshop before we even started, we tried out all these colors. And so if you went into the paint shop, you would have seen boards of all the different colors of all the different buildings with textures all put in there. And then you start to add other textures. And we also brought quite a lot of things over from India because both Tina and I have worked there quite a lot and we've got contacts there. So we didn't have time to go over ourselves, sadly, but we have our contacts. And so they sent us a lot of basket work and wooden bowls and other kind of brass lamps and that, all that sort of stuff other than the lamp. So I think we kind of created our own kind of language, if you like, and our own form of reality that we were all very committed to. And it's really hard to explain, but if somebody had put an anachronism in there, we would have noticed it immediately. It would have been, we would have known immediately that has to go. That's not right.
Well, I think it makes sense. There's an authenticity to the story that you're telling, not necessarily to something found in real life in a way. And it's interesting to hear you say that because I thought the choice to actually shoot in the desert was a choice for as much authenticity as possible.
Yes, you had to do that. I mean, that's the whole point. That you head out there and then you go into another mad, crazy world of the Cave of Wonders. But yes, I think that's what I think I'm saying is you kind of went to the desert away from the crazy, mad town and you just had this beautiful, peaceful expanse to kind of take a breath, to get away from the madness and move into the next bit of madness, you know.
Last question for you. If you had to pick a favorite set on Aladdin, what would it be?
Oh my goodness me! I kind of maybe the Broken Tower, or
really
maybe Jasmine's. I love that kind of meeting room in the palace, the stairs coming down. You know what? I love the whole film actually. For many many years I haven't been as kind of enchanted by something that I'm involved with. I think it's quite delightful. I've never, as I say, it's been a long time since I've been so pleased. All over with everybody. I just think it's been a joy, you know.
I can hear the enthusiasm in your voice and it's infectious.
Oh, thank you.
GemmaJackson.net is where you can go to see her her work here. And she's got a fantastic portfolio of films. My God, you really do amazing work. And I'm really excited for the audience to see this film. And thank you so much for being on Go Creative Show to share your story.
Thank you very much indeed. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
There she goes, Gemma Jackson, legendary production designer. Wow, does she do great work? She really, really does. That movie was so fun and so great. Fantastic. You know what else is fantastic? Matt Russell. Matt Russell is the guy that mixes and masters and makes this show sound so good. You can find him over at gainstructure.com, gainstructure.com, and on Twitter, @gainstructure. @gainstructure. While you're on Twitter, you can tweet us. Let us know what you think of the show, if you have any guest suggestions. Of course, follow our Instagram and our Facebook. We're putting all sorts of fun things up there. some bonus stuff and clips from the show and a whole bunch of things there. So check it out. I also want you to check out our sponsors, Hedge.video, Rule Boston Camera, Magnanimous Rentals, Shutterstock, and Premium Beat. Without these people, the show wouldn't exist. So support those that support us.